Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Book of Revelation when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something must be wrong with them because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions. And now they've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. And you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, commandments, and penalties, as well as the 33 benefits for their observance. Every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or the Common Law or Natural Law or Karma or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which happen to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order a free General Law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to our archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and go to our archives page. All right, we've been talking about the Book of Revelation. A young man sent me a letter, and he asked me why I don't talk more about the Book of Revelation or expound and explain it. So I thought, well, let's take a look at what the parameters are for expounding and explaining this book called the Book of Revelation. So I started off, and I pointed out that I've got a lot of books over here that purport to expound and explain this enigmatic book that we see in the Bible. It's called the Book of Revelation, last book, 22 chapters, that we see in Scripture. And they all disagree with one another. They all come up with different conclusions. So the first thing we needed to do was to figure out, well, why are all these people coming up with all these different conclusions? And the answer is, the book is written in code. And these people are reading the book in its literal sense. And Isaiah 28 and Matthew 13 explain how that code works. Line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. So I gave you a couple of examples. Remember, we looked at Revelation 3:10, compared that with Revelation 14:12, and we discovered that the word patience means commandment keeping. And that we looked at the word faith and the word works, and we discovered that the requirement for all of us, if we want this thing called salvation, is works. You have to practice these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, which is something none of us want to do. So there's a group of people over here that fit in, though, to this standard of works. They're called the elect, E-L-E-C-T. There's a group of people in the Scripture. That word elect is mentioned 17 times in the Bible. You'll find it in the Old Testament four times. It's in Isaiah 42, verse 1, referring to Jesus. And it's in Isaiah 45, verse 4, and Isaiah 65, verse 9 and 22, talking about the elect. In the New Testament, we find it in Matthew 24, verses 24 and 31. It's repeated in Mark 13, verses 22 and 27, and in Luke 18, verse 7. And Paul mentions it two or three times, and Peter and John mention it. Elect. It's a word that means select, choose, chosen one, favorite, chosen, elect, or select. Now, we took a look at this a little earlier. Let me show you what this is all about. When we look at John 6, verse 65, we find that there's a standard here that God uses for determining who these elect people are going to be. Listen to this. It says, "And he said, therefore, said I unto you, that no man can come unto me except it were given unto him by my Father." You know, that's a pretty powerful statement. Now, in the world of Christianity, the Christians have a worldview, and they have a desire, and I suspect that it's probably a well-meaning intent or desire, just like Gene sent me a letter, sent me a book on Revelation, said, hey, I think you need this, sent me a number of treatises. From Gene's point of view, for all of us out here listening to this story, he wants to do me a favor. He sees himself as being one of the elect, and I'm on the outside, and he needs to do something to save me. The Mormon that comes and knocks on my door is well-meaning, and he says to himself, I just have to tell this guy Gordon about Mormonism and about the truth that I know and that I've accepted in order to save George Gordon, because I like him. You know, people knocking on my door wanting to do this for me must like me. Gene must like me to have spent the time, effort, and energy that he has in order to warn me, to inform me. And I certainly appreciate that, and I want to thank you for it. But it's to no effect. It's to no avail, Gene. You see, let's look at it from the perspective of the Scripture. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, you and the Jehovah's Witnesses are the elect of God, selected and chosen out. And George Gordon is not one of them. I'm on the outs. I haven't been selected. Now, that being the case, the state of affairs, listen to John 6:65 again. And he said, therefore, said I unto you, that no man can come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father. Jesus said to all of us that except the Father selects, picks, chooses George Gordon, he cannot come. Ain't going to happen, Gene. All right, now let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's suppose that I am one of the elect. Well, then there isn't any need, Gene, for me to come knock on your door and say, Gene, you need to do this, that, and another thing, because unless you've been called by God the Father, there isn't anything in the world that I'm going to do to persuade you as to what it is I believe you need to do in order to join the club so you can be with me. Now, parents are very prone to this. I have 5 children. And I love my children, and I would like nothing more in the world than to have my children follow this law, practice the Ten Commandments and the statutes and the judgments. If for no other reason, it's just a better program than the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto that we have replaced the 10 Commandments with. You know, our founding fathers, when they created our Constitution, put 22 principles of law into our founding document, the Constitution. 22. And they're all based upon the 10 Commandments. They got it out of the Bible. They didn't have a separation of church and state back in 1787. They thought that God and the Bible were good and that we ought to follow them. Now, in addition to that just being a real good law and a real good political, economic, and social format to follow, there's a requirement that we do that if we want to attain salvation, which is the next step up. Then if you want to come into that first resurrection, well, you really got to make a step up. Now, I would like my children to come up in the first resurrection, but unless God the Father calls and chooses them, just because Abraham Lincoln became president of the United States did not mean that his children were all going to become president of the United States. It's true, a couple of our presidents have had sons that followed in their footsteps and became president, but that's an exception. That's not the rule. And it's natural that people who like other people would like them to be selected. And I'm sure that every Mormon missionary who's out there knocking on doors has a sincere and an earnest desire to see people or join the Mormon church and be saved and go to heaven to be with Jesus. I'm sure that they're well-meaning. But it's for no good purpose, because unless those people have been called by God the Father, they can't come. Now, I didn't write that, so I just wanted to report to you. You people out there that are knocking on doors, just wasting your time. You can sell people on the idea of joining the Mormon church. You can sell people on the idea of joining the Catholic church. You can sell people on the idea of buying the Encyclopedia Britannica or the Reader's Digest. I don't deny that. But you're never going to sell these people on the idea of practicing the Ten Commandments, obeying God, and becoming one of the elect. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God. This is Romans 8:7. Here's God revealing to us again. He said, Gene, your just natural, ordinary carnal mind is enmity against God. You hate him. Oh, I know you profess that you love Jesus. Which is what prompted Jesus to say, well, why are you running around here telling everybody how much you love Jesus, and then you don't do anything I tell you? Remember in Luke 6:46? I mean, I'm telling you, and then you don't pay attention, you don't listen. I buy you books and you eat the covers. And that's because unless your mind is opened, you can't come. Now, Jesus in Matthew 13 explained that. So hit that one more time for you. Matthew 13, the disciples said, why are you speaking to these people in parables? And he said, well, I'm speaking in parables so they can't understand. Now, I had a guy one time, nice guy, and his name is Dennis. He's been to school here several times. Super good guy. Comes into school, and one day he said to me, he said, you know, Gordon, I was better off before I ever met you. I mean, here's a guy that spent a lot of money. He comes to school and he pays his tuition. It takes a lot of time, effort, and energy in this process. Educates himself. Walks in my door one day and says, you know, I would have been better off if I'd never heard your name, never came to your school. And so why do you say that, Dennis? And he said, well, because I'm responsible for my actions now. And I said to him, I said, well, it's true. You are. Now you are responsible for your actions. And then he said, I was a bead-flipping Catholic before I met you, and I was just happy as a clam at high tide. He said, but now I'm responsible for all of this knowledge that you've given me. Now that you've explained to me why the law of God is in full force and effect, I have to practice it now, whereas before I didn't. And before I wasn't in danger of the judgment. I wasn't in danger of the unpardonable sin. I wasn't in danger of the lake of fire, but now I am. I said, that's true. It is true. You're in danger now. You have to perform on the requirements of the law because now you know and understand it. To him that knows sin, it is sin. To him that thinks that it's sin and goes out and practices that, it is sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. The wages of sin is death. Now, all of us are going to die once. It is appointed to every man to die once. Nobody gets out of here alive. Not even God himself got out of here alive. Then comes the resurrection. All of us are going to be resurrected, like it or lump it. That's coming. But you're not going to have any knowledge between the time you die and the time you're resurrected of anything that's going on. You're going to be totally unconscious. You're going back into a state of being that you were in 500 years ago. Non-existence. Dust you are, and dust is what you're going to return to. Now, people read the scripture, and they see these literal terms, and they say, God, I got to warn mom and dad. I got to warn my brothers and sisters and children. And then these people laugh at you, and they make fun of you. This is foolishness to them. They don't grasp the significance of it. That's why you don't need to tell them about it, Gene. They're wasting your time. So that's why I thought I would bring this out, and we'll point out to you that the book of Revelation is written for the servants of God, and they're called the elect. Now, in Matthew 13, Jesus cited Isaiah 6, verses 9 through 13. And here's what he said. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing, they see not, and hearing, they hear not, and neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled this prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing you shall hear, and shall not understand, and seeing you shall see, and you shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, their ears are dull of hearing, their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and they should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. All right, now that's the danger that Dennis is in. He knocked on the door and says, gee, I'm interested in your school, Mr. Gordon, teach me. Come on in, Dennis. Now sit down, let me explain this to you. Now, obviously his mind has been opened under the statute or the provision in John 6:65. I want to know. God said, I'll teach it. Now he knows and understands, and now he's saddened because he really doesn't want to practice the Passover every year, or the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Sabbath. But now he knows that if he doesn't, he's in danger of the judgment. Now, the average Catholic, he doesn't understand the Sabbath. He thinks that's on Sunday. He goes to church, he goes to Mass on Sunday. He practices Christmas, Easter, New Year's. He believes that's the thing to do. He doesn't know anything at all about Passover, or the Feast of Unleavened Bread, or the Feast of Weeks, or the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Day of Atonement. He doesn't care. He's not in danger of the judgment. He's coming up in the second resurrection with my Aunt Bessie. God love her. And everything is going to be fine. Well, unless he rebels against God during that 100-year period, everything's going to be fine. Now, getting back to you, Gene, you probably sent me this information because you're concerned about me and you want me to see things your way, unfortunately. Assuming now that you're one of the elect, unless God opens my mind and shows me, I'm never going to see that. Furthermore, it's not even in my best interests. Because if I were to understand what it is you're trying to tell me, and if what you're trying to tell me is in fact the truth, and I've rejected it and I don't accept it, then I would be in danger of the lake of fire. Which is why this isn't for everybody. I tell my students very plainly, this school is not for everybody. Not everybody can grasp the significance of this. This is a school where we're going to teach you how to become a king and a priest for the express purpose of international geopolitics and making the first resurrection. And that's what the game is all about. But it isn't for everybody. And I'm not out beating the gong and knocking on doors and trying to get people to convert and to change your way of life. If you're called, you'll know it, and you'll heed the call. If you're not, sit back and relax and enjoy the ride. Now, that doesn't mean just because you're not being called in the first resurrection that the Ten Commandments and the laws of God aren't important to you. Let me give you a couple of illustrations. Let's suppose we take a look here at the graft and corruption and the filth and perversion that's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, particularly the rape of our economic system by the big banks, the Congress, and the President of the United States. They have just ripped off $29 trillion from you. You and the other 300 million Americans out there. Over the last 18 months, they have guaranteed and promised and passed out and made the pledges and sold bonds and indebted you for $29 trillion in a program to enslave you. Well, it would be in your best interest if you were alerted to that. And if you were to follow the laws, for instance, the law of God requires that you don't use unjust weights and balances. If you would quit using Federal Reserve notes, stocks and bonds, mortgages, debt instruments, and practicing usury and interest, it would be a whole lot better for you. Not that I give a rat's rectum one way or the other. You know, it's no skin off my back. If you go out and buy a new car to stimulate the economy and sign a 60-month contract and start paying interest, I don't care. No, nothing to me. But it's gonna come back, bite you in the butt, and it's going to cost you a lot more. And then on top of that, you're going to be impoverished as a result of it. Now, if you think poverty is a good thing, get after it. You got a mortgage on your house, people call the law school here almost every day. Every day they're calling. Oh, my house is being foreclosed on. I don't know what I'm going to do. Mr. Gordon, can you help me save my house? Listen, boys and girls, you people went out here and you signed these contracts. Nobody had a gun sticking in your head, did they? And you signed these contracts with balloon payments and ALT provisions and interest and usury. You went out and you broke the law. And you can sit there and say, well, I didn't know. Well, I'm sure you didn't. But just because you don't know what the law is doesn't mean that you're not going to have to pay the penalty when you violate it. People eat pig every day, not understanding that a human digestive system cannot assimilate and cannot digest pig. Just telling you. Who told me that? God. So the Creator comes along, he says, now listen, I created you and I created your digestive system and dogs can eat pig. Dogs can digest pig. Humans can't. And it makes them sick and they come down with all kinds of diseases and ailments. And then when they get these ailments and then they come to school, I tell them, well, it's, you know, you're probably eating pig and fat and it's catching up with you. Like old Roy, you know, he came here to school years ago and I remember he was here in class, we're talking about pig and he was really offended. He was a Christian and he was about 44 years old at the time. And he said, quote, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. That's what he said. Nobody's going to tell me what to eat. And I assured him, I said, sir, I'm not here to tell you what to eat. I don't care what you eat. But you came here to school because you wanted to learn, you know, what's causing your problems. No one telling you, you know. Well, at age 47, I got a call from his wife. This guy was from down around Amarillo, Texas. I got a call from his wife. Said, well, Roy died 3 years after he was here. In fact, I told old Roy right then, he had a line through the bottom of his ear, both ears, deep, heavy lines. I said, Roy, you have advanced atherosclerosis, as is evidenced by the lines in your ears. And he was shocked. He said, you mean to tell me you can read my ears? I said, sure. Those lines in the lobe of your ear tell us that your arteries are plugged up to around 65, 70, maybe even as high as 80%. And when they get up to about 85%, it's going to kill you. 36 months later, his wife called up and said, old Roy died of heart attack. Well, I told him he was going to die. I told him he was going to die from a heart attack, and I told him the thing that was killing him was pig and fat, and he didn't listen. And he was a nice guy. I liked him. You know, most students that come here are nice guys, and I like them. And my job is to disseminate information, so that's what I'm doing. So when you suggest that I bring up the book of Revelation, let me do that. The book of Revelation is written for the elect. It's written for the servants of God, the servants of Jesus. And they will understand it because they are going to search the scriptures daily. They are going to prove all things. Those servants are going to write out a copy of the law of God, and they're going to keep it with them, and they're going to read it from time to time. And they're going to practice that. And because they read and practice the law of God, the Ten Commandments and the statutes and judgments, their understanding is going to be good. It's going to be better. It's going to get better and better. The more you practice the law of God, the better your understanding becomes. Those are the people who, searching the scriptures and studying to show themselves approved, a workman unto God that needs not be ashamed, have a shot at making that first resurrection. But they have to be called from God. I can't call anybody. I do not send out brochures and say, come here so I can teach you how to be saved and make the first resurrection. I can't do that. I don't have any capacity for that. Best I can do is say, well, I'm a reporter and I'm a teacher. There's some things that I know, things that will benefit you physically right here on planet Earth today, tomorrow, and next week. Let me give you an illustration. We teach a class here on how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. It's a takeoff off of Professor Whatley's program at Tuskegee Institute. Professor Whatley didn't practice the Ten Commandments or the Law of God, didn't practice Jubilees and Land Sabbaths, didn't practice the 15 agricultural laws, but he developed a marketing strategy and program and a program, and we adopted that program and added the 15 agricultural laws, and God, does it work. There are about 4,000 of these little economic entities all over America. They work like a shot. So here we are in the midst of a recession, In fact, I think it's more like depression. Here's 4,000 of these little economic entities over there producing the one thing that everybody's got to have, food, and they're doing it and making a premium and getting a premium price for the product. And then I say that practicing the agricultural laws of God as it relates to Professor Whatley's program over there is good for those people, irrespective of whether they ever show up in the first resurrection or not, or whether they ever get called in this phase of their life. It's just a better program. If you could get out from under that mortgage on your house, if you could get out of debt, it would be better for you. So I'm not here beating the gong telling you to give your heart to Jesus, but this is a better program. And our founding fathers, when they gave us a treasury with gold and silver coin, and they put a ban on paper money, and they advanced gold and silver coin under Article 1, Section 10. They did us all a big favor. And between 1787 and 1933, we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world economically. That was good for us. The practice of just weights and balances was a good program. That was a good idea. And I advanced that, and I think that's a hell of a good idea. And Ron Paul, you know, God love him, Ron Paul is one of the few men in Congress that advocates and advances this concept of hard money, just weights and balances, gold and silver coin. And I wish that there was another 200 or 300 in the Congress that would do the same thing. It would be better for our nation, better for you and me, which has nothing to do with religion. We don't have to knock on anybody's door. Don't have to get anybody saved. But I thought it would be worthwhile to take a look at these people called the elect. Now, these people that are the elect are doing something that's going to get them a benefit, gets them a benefit right now today. I'm not crying out that the government or some bank is going to foreclose on my house, or my car is in jeopardy, or I don't have a job and I haven't got any money and I won't be able to pay my bills and so on. I'm not concerned with that. I got off that boat a long time ago. And I'm here to teach students that want to. Here's how to get off that boat. It's like riding on the Titanic. You need to get off that tub. That thing is just trouble. Get off of her. Hey, listen, I got to give you a reminder here, and we'll come back and take a look at Ezekiel 18. I'll show you another little part of this. But meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online and you listen to our program on a podcast or on the Internet, why don't you just go to our website, georgegordon.org, download it direct, and then you can do that by going to our archives page. That's where it's located. It's on the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Let's flip over here and give you an illustration of this thing of the practical application of this law of God, that is the Ten Commandments, the statutes, and the judgments. We'll find that in Ezekiel chapter 18. Ezekiel, one of the major prophets, he's called. You got three major prophets over here. It's Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And then you have a bunch of minor prophets. Know all these little guys like Obadiah and Micah and Nahum and Daniel and so on. They're called the minor prophets. Well, this is a pretty big prophecy here. This is a book which is written for us today. This book is the manifestation of a story that God wanted you and I to hear at the beginning of the Great Tribulation, the period of time leading up to this Great Tribulation. And he says, now here's what I'm going to do. This is chapter 18. He's talking about righteous men and wicked men. Subject matter here is fathers and sons, and who pays the penalties for each other's sins or transgressions or criminal behavior. So he starts off here, he says, the word of the Eternal came unto me again, saying, what mean you that you use this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying that the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge? As I live, says the Eternal, the Lord God, you shall not have occasion any more to use this proverb in Israel. Behold, all souls are mine. And as the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine. And the soul that sinneth, it shall die. That's a pretty powerful statement. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. The wages of sin is death. And we learned a little earlier here in the series of programs here in 1 John 3, verse 4, sin is a transgression of the law. Sin is the transgression of the law. If you break the law, you will die. Well, we all know that. Nobody gets out of here alive. Now, when you die, you're going into a hole in the ground to await your turn, every man in his own order, for your resurrection. And it'll be first, second, or third. Just that simple, first, second, or third. Now, there's one guy that I think may be a prime candidate for the third resurrection, and that was Judas Iscariot. And the reason I say that is because the Messiah made this comment, made this observation. He said of Judas, it would have been better if he had never been born. That's quite a statement. Now, a lot of people are born, and they turn out to be pretty bad apples. You know, Adolf Hitler and Joe Stalin, Genghis Khan, you know, are some examples of people that turned out to be, you know, a little less than desirable. I could not say that they're going into the lake of fire. They may. They were pretty wicked, evil guys. And, of course, most of us today would say, well, they deserve it. They need to go into the lake of fire. But this same God now said to us, he said, judge not, lest you be judged. I don't know if Adolf Hitler should go into the lake of fire or not. I can't tell you that Joe Stalin deserves to go into the lake of fire. The Messiah said, vengeance is mine, says the Eternal. I will repay. So I'm content with that. That's not my bailiwick. That's not my deal in life, judging Adolf Hitler, Genghis Khan, and Joe Stalin. In fact, with specificity, God himself has said, butt out, Gordon. Butt out. So I just said, yes, sir. You know, I'll butt out. It's not my job to make those kinds of decisions. But observations I can make. They're bad guys, but my observation is they'll probably come up in the 100-year resurrection and be given their opportunity. If you want my thinking on it, I'm not sure that they're going into the lake of fire. But Judas now is another case. Now, that guy could possibly qualify. There's a second guy that might qualify for it, and that's Solomon. Solomon asked God at age 12, he said, I want you to give me wisdom. That's pretty heavy-duty stuff. He said, I want you to explain. I want you to show me. I want you to give me this understanding. And he got it. And he didn't follow instructions. He did not follow instructions. And as a result of that, it's kind of like old Dennis saying to me, he said, you know, I was better off before I heard this. You know, that's what we see here in Matthew 13. The Messiah was careful. He says, I'm not going to tell you people so much that it's going to get you into trouble, because if you don't practice this, boys and girls, if you know that this is the law and you need to practice this and you refuse or you don't do it, you're asking for trouble. You ought not to do that. And that's what we're seeing here. He says, all souls are mine, and as the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine, and the soul that sins, it shall die. But if a man be just, in verse 5, 9 says, but if a man be just and do that which is lawful and right, and if he has not eaten upon the mountains, neither has lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, and neither has defiled his neighbor's wife, and neither has come near to a menstruous woman, and has not oppressed any, but has restored to the debtor his pledge, has spoiled none by violence, has given his bread to the hungry, has covered the naked with a garment, he that has not given forth upon usury, neither has taken any increase, that has withdrawn his hand from iniquity, has executed true judgment between man and man, has walked in my statutes, and has kept my judgments, to deal truly. He is just. He shall surely live, says the Eternal. Now here again, here comes some works in here, and I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings and rain on your parade, but you know, here comes your Creator, and he says, you know, I want you to walk in my statutes and practice my laws and deal justly and honestly. I don't want you to act like these clowns at Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, that live in the White House and hold seats in the Congress. These are wicked and evil people. So I don't want you to do that. So, again, you and I have some doings to do. It would help us all if you were to write out, Gene, pay attention here. Gene, write out the entire law of God, all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. And when you get through, you're going to have a binder written out in longhand about 2 inches thick. Man, it's quite a bit of writing, and you're going to need to get after it. And if you did that, you would be in a better position to follow and practice this law. No guarantee you'll come up in the first resurrection. Boys and girls, let me tell you, I wrote out the entire old covenant statutes of Moses. Wrote them all in longhand. Got them out. Then I codified them. I put them into alphabetical order. I wrote out the entire book of Proverbs. And I put every subject matter in the book of Proverbs in alphabetical order. It's a book about 2 inches thick. And that does not give me any inside track to coming up in the first resurrection. I don't have any track at all. Doing that hasn't harmed me any. Doing that has made me better capable and qualified of following and practicing this law, which benefits me physically. It puts money in my pocket. It puts food on my table. It benefits me in 100 ways and doesn't give me any kind of inside track on coming up or being saved or making that first resurrection. Isn't that the pits? Many are called, few are chosen. How do I know I'm going to be chosen? I listen to Christians, they tell me all the time, hey, are you saved? And then I tell them no. And they look at me with disgust. I don't have any guarantees. I have high hopes. I would like to have salvation. I'd like to have eternal life. I'd like to have rulership over the nations and an inheritance in the earth. I don't know if I can qualify for that. The boss, the guy that says, you know, I'll judge, don't you judge, I'll do the judging. That's the guy that I'm trying to get a job from. That's the guy I'm trying to impress. So next Sunday, you know, instead of trying to impress the congregation with your appearance and trying to impress the preacher, why don't you stay home next Sunday? Don't waste your time on church and start writing out the Ten Commandments. Start writing out the statutes in Exodus 21, 22, and 23. And see if maybe you can impress God a little bit. Because that's the guy that says he's got a job. That's the guy that says he's prepared to hire you. All right, going on here then in verse 10, he says, now if this man begets a son that is a robber, a shedder of blood, and that does the like to any one of these things, and that doeth not any of those duties, but even has eaten upon the mountains, defiled his neighbor's wife. Let me pause here for a moment. I've code-plugged these out, so I'm going to tell you what that is. Do you know what eating upon the mountains is? Well, a mountain is a government. So when you do your legal research and you code-plate it out, you'll find out that the word mountain or mountains is synonymous with a government. Now, eating upon the mountains, what do you think that would be? Do you suppose maybe that might be Social Security, WIC, food stamps, aid to families with dependent children? You suppose maybe taking the dole? Yeah, that's what I thought it was. And defiled his neighbor's wife. Do you know what defiling your neighbor's wife is? You know, that we call that adultery, fornication. You know? Well, it's not fornication, it's adultery if it's your neighbor's wife. But, you know, illegal sexual activity. You want to find out what sexual activity is prohibited and which is permitted, you go to Leviticus chapter 18. It has all the sex laws in there. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I mean, there's a whole chapter just full of, you know, don't have sex with this and don't do it with that and don't do it with this other guy, but do it with this and do it with that and so on. There's just a bunch of them in there. That's why it's kind of neat. See, if you had written out Leviticus chapter 18, hey, you'd have a better understanding of adultery and fornication and sexual crimes and what's permitted and what isn't. And verse 12, he says, has oppressed the poor and the needy, and then has spoiled by violence, has not restored the pledge. You know, you haven't paid your bills. Has lifted up his eyes to the idols. He practiced Christmas, Easter, New Year's. Has committed abomination. Now, abomination is a general term. You have committed sin or criminal acts. Has given forth upon usury. That is, you're paying payments on your house with the interest rate. And has taken increase, that is, you've charged other people interest. Shall he then live? Shall a man that does these things live? He shall not live. He has done all these abominations. He shall surely die, and his blood shall be upon him. Now, you know, Gene, you probably have a mortgage on your house, and you're paying interest. And you go to church, and I'll bet you that your church has a mortgage on it, and you signed up and joined the building fund so that you could help pay off that mortgage to the bankers. The preacher in your church probably has a house, and he's paying interest on that mortgage. And your fellow parishioners in there all have automobiles, and they're driving the newest car that they can, making payments on it every month, aren't they? And you people are sitting there going to church and praying to Jesus, and you say, oh, Jesus, have mercy on us because we're sinners. And Jesus, you know, said to you, he said, hey, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? You people don't have to have mortgages on your house. You don't have to drive the newest car. You don't have to be making car payments. You chose to do that. You don't have to be practicing adultery with your neighbor's wife. You can stop anytime you want. You do that because it's fun. You're going down to Flo's Whorehouse because that's an enjoyable experience. I don't deny it. Sin is fun. Sin is just filled with joy and all kinds of excitement and fun. People love it. That doesn't mean it's good for you. It doesn't mean that that's going to make any money for you or feed you in the future. And so here in Ezekiel 18, you know, God's going to land it out to us. He says, you know, if a man's righteous and he does this, shall he live? He shall live. But if a man is wicked and evil, shall he live? He shall not live. I didn't write it, so don't get mad at me. Here's verse 14. He says, now, lo, if he begets a son that sees all his father's sins, which he has done, and considers and doeth not such like. I did that. When I read that years ago, I looked at my father, died at age 53. Looked at my granddad, died at age 61. And I said, now, those two men were entitled to 70 years, 70 as a matter of law. And they didn't get their 70. And I looked at that and I said, well, what about my dad and my granddad? I loved them both. They're nice guys. My granddad, when he died, was so popular, there were 328 people signed the register at on the day of his funeral. There was room for about 50 or 75 people inside the funeral home. It was packed, standing room only. Outside on the sidewalk, there were hundreds. 328 signed it. My granddad was a very popular man. He smoked, he drank, he chased wild women. He did all the things that normal loggers and lumbermen and people do. And he was well-liked by everybody. And my dad, same thing. But, and I want to point out to you, that they did not live to be 70 years old. So I considered that, and I said, you know, I think maybe I better quit smoking, quit drinking, quit chasing wild women, and settle down here. Maybe I need to practice more of this law. So I tried that. Now I'm 70. I'm the first Gordon in five generations, first one to live to be 70 years old. I hope to make it to 80 or 90. Verse 15, he says, that has not eaten upon the mountains, neither has lifted up. Now let me tell you what I'm doing. I'm eligible for Social Security. If I went down and signed up, I think they'd give it to me. I'm not taking Social Security and welfare and food stamps and benefits. I'm going to feed myself. I'm going to take care of myself. And if I can't do that, just let me die, would you? Don't come here and force national health care insurance on me, would you? Just leave me alone. I don't want it, don't need it, and I'm trying to avoid it. And neither has lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, Christmas, Easter, New Year's, has not defiled his neighbor's wife, and I did, but I quit doing that. Neither has oppressed any, has not withholden the pledge. That is, I'm not withholding what comes out of my mouth. I'm not promising people what I can't deliver. And neither has spoiled by violence. I never did do that. I never did beat up on people and steal their money. And so I'm pretty safe there. But has given his bread to the hungry. And yep, I've got a third tithe can over here. I'm going to give to the poor. And has covered the naked with a garment. And when I see somebody that's in need and downtrodden, I'm going to help them. That has taken off his hand from the poor, that has not received usury or increase. And I used to do that. I used to pay interest, and I used to charge interest. I quit doing that. Closed my bank accounts, got off my credit cards, and executed my judgments, and has walked in my statutes. He shall not die for the iniquity of his father. He shall surely live. And as for his father, because he cruelly oppressed, spoiled his brother by violence, and did that which is not good among his people, lo, even he shall die in his iniquity. Now, my dad died in his iniquity, and so did my granddad. Now, if there's any way that I can avoid that, I'm going to do it. Now, there's one more little factor here that we need to factor in. Religious people want to be seen of men. They want to go to church. And they want to play bingo. And it's a social club. And they want to participate with other people of like minds. Now, those same people, they don't want to practice the Ten Commandments. Maybe they'll practice 9, but by God, they don't want to practice 10. And maybe, you know, they don't mind a little charity here, but they're not going to practice, you know, the land Sabbaths and the Jubilees. They're going to practice some of the laws of God, but they're not going to practice all of them. And so these people are not, in my view, very good candidates for the first resurrection just based upon what we see here in Ezekiel 18. In fact, when this tribulation comes down on us, this Great Depression, this World War III, this real nasty period of time that we see prophesied by Moses in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, and by Matthew in Matthew 24 and Mark in Mark 13 and Luke in Luke 21 and John in Revelation 6, 7, and 8. Hey, this does not sound like a good program. It doesn't sound like something that I want to get into. And when that comes down, this great tribulation, when this happens to us, we should all know and understand we deserved it. We're just getting our just desserts. And if, perchance, we can get off of this just in the nick of time, stop doing these wicked and evil acts and start practicing the Ten Commandments again, you know, maybe we might get away with it. Maybe God might not kill us. Maybe he won't punish us. And then just maybe you might qualify. I mean, if you work hard enough at it, you might qualify. If your works support it, you might qualify for the first resurrection. want to know what we teach here at the law school. That's it. So we're not out here knocking on doors, not trying to get you or anybody else to see things our way. And that's because I'm not here to persuade people to see things my way. That's why I don't talk too much about the book of Revelation, because the book of Revelation is a book of revealing to the elect, to the servants of Jesus. They don't need anybody to reveal it, because they have it revealed to them because they're busily code pleading it. The people who are the servants of Jesus are the ones that code plead out words like Revelation 3:10 and 14:12. They're the guys that code plead out Revelation 20 and took those three resurrections and extrapolated them into Isaiah 65 and Ezekiel 37 and Matthew 24 and Mark 13 and Luke 21. And so the people that are the servants who can qualify to be the elect have the book of Revelation revealed to them by their own works. They actually practice the Ten Commandments, and they're hated for it. Jesus himself said, if you do this, if you practice this law, you'll be hated of all nations. Your worst enemies will be those of your own family. Let me close with that one. It's in Matthew 10. Matthew 10. He said, hey, listen, your worst enemies are going to be those of your own household. You know, your mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and so on. Listen to this. He says, think not that I've come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I'm come to set a man at variance against his father, the daughter against her mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes shall be those of his own household. He that loves father or mother more than me isn't worthy of me, and he that loves son or daughter more than me isn't worthy of me, and he that taketh not up his cross and follows after me isn't worthy of me. He that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life shall find it. Bottom line. Worst enemies will be those of your own household. All right, guys, I'm out of time again. So let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and our archives. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing.